It's only a hypothesis that has to be proved correct. It's even a little worse. It's the problem is whatever it is, but the solution is always the same. Materialist takeover of people's minds to think that the material world is all that exists. And if you think that, then it's perfectly reasonable to think that science is the highest and basically only form of knowledge. And if you think that and you have arrogance, then scientists end up thinking they know everything, when in fact they have conjectures about a few things. That's what science claims scientists are, people who have conjectures with varying degrees of evidence about a few things.
But what they're calling science these days is more of just blind faith and hypotheses. They don't test them or prove them, and some of them just go against all evidence.
Well, yeah, because
they're wearing face masks to stop the spread of a virus when that never worked in the past.
Yeah, and the 6 feet number was completely arbitrary.
Well, it was based on a study that basically proved that you would have spread it in the circumstances that they were pushing for it. It spread 6 feet in this amount of time, but which if you go into a store, it doesn't really matter. If somebody walked in with COVID an hour ago, the particles are going to be everywhere in the store. And the same study said that it would, you know, if somebody was riding the bike next to you, it could spread 20 feet. But to all those people that say face masks work, I would tell them, I'd say, go get like a vape pen or something and inhale a big old cloud of vapor and breathe it out and see if the vapor doesn't come out of the mask, because it always does. Put some glasses on and wonder why your glasses are fogging up.
Yeah.
It's because face masks don't stop water vapor, and they're not going to stop the viruses that are in it.
Yeah.
But they called that science.
It was a metastasization of science. It was I claim to have some knowledge, so now I can pick what I want to be true. You know, that's not even necessarily related to the science that came before it.
It was just a facade of science. It's like the buildings in North Korea. They look nice, but they're just two-dimensional.
It's a claim of authority, and therefore I get to make self-serving things into science.
Yeah.
Or, you know, want to be into science so that, you know, in Anthony Fauci's case, it's power. In the common person's case, it's I'm better than you because I wear a face mask and protect my, you know, the people around me by getting a mystery jab. And
then they go redefine what a vaccine is so that they can still say that the science says so.
Yeah, I mean, it's not...
it's safe and effective for what, you know, and then they keep stepping the line back.
It's safe and effective, except the dictionary changed the definition of vaccine.
And then effective to what extent? You can Google what like 99% effective, 98% effective, and you can pick any number between 100 and 0, and you'll get a news article saying the COVID shot is now only this percent effective.
Yeah, you see, there's a clip that Elon Musk put on Twitter, and it's got a fast accelerating song as the percentages of COVID effectiveness in news articles go from 100 to 99 to 98 to 97 all the way down to 45.
Yeah.
and then people are wondering, and then there are investigations into this, you know, who in their right minds thought that we could have something, we could have all the kinks worked out of a vaccine in less than a year? Of a completely...
Well, it's because they had been pioneering these mRNA techniques for about a decade.
They've been studying them, but they haven't had human test subjects, if I'm mistaken.
They've used non-human primates, though. And I don't know if I've said this before, but it's a government site, that has a research paper on using non-human primates using an mRNA vaccine to sterilize them permanently. And the push of the paper is like, we're going to get control of the feral dogs and cats, but we're going to study it on non-human primates just because we got a lot of feral non-human primates running around.
Yeah, take care of that excess chimpanzee population.
I actually did see yesterday there was a little monkey that tried to abduct a little kid in some tropical place.
We don't have a problem with
this. What I don't get is when they think that giving somebody an injection is more quote unquote humane than the more obvious ways to achieve the goal. Oh, so we got to give you the death penalty, so we're going to give you an injection because that's going to make us feel better. We got to put down our dog, so we're going to give it an injection because, I don't know.
Yeah, it's sort of hiding from the, in the case of a lethal injection, it's sort of hiding from the brutality of the fact.
Yeah.
No, but with a vaccine, why was there complete incuriosity about, say, a medicine? You know, if you get it, then we'll have you take, then we'll have a medicine that helps with the symptoms. Because that's what you do for, there's a vaccine for flu, but there's also Tamiflu. There's a drug.
Has the vaccine for the flu actually ever worked?
Well, what it is there are a bunch of strains of flu out there, and they guess which, three or four strains are going to be the most prevalent this season, and they give you a vaccine against those. And then sometimes people just get the flu anyway because it was one of the other strains.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy it. As, in light of what they did with COVID, they could just be guessing it's a vaccine.
Yeah.
Well, how would you know if it's effective or not? Because it's not like they're telling you what strain of vaccine that they gave you and which flu you got.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
From just anecdotal experience, I've known about as many people who have got the flu shot and then got the flu that year. More people in that category than who've got the flu shot and then didn't get sick that year.
I can't say I know that many people who've gotten the flu shot, although
I got it
it's
once
funny.
It didn't kill me.
I've heard of universities where I don't think I've ever gotten it, but I've seen a lot of university websites where they require the flu shot as well as the COVID vaccine, which is starting to get relaxed.
How come the medical community didn't say, hey, all the flu cases disappeared this year. Maybe we're misdiagnosing those as COVID.
Yeah, well, that would assume honest questioning.
Well, if you're going to say you're a scientist, you got to follow the scientific method and not have your proving your hypothesis as the goal.
Yeah, it should be open to rigorous skepticism.
You try to prove your hypothesis wrong. That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, and then when you can't prove it wrong, that's when you get to say it's right.
Yeah.
Or when you prove that anything that would prove it wrong is wrong, that kind of. But science loses its rigor when people sort of consider themselves more like priests of science instead of scientists.
Yeah.
Right. It becomes a cult. You make sacrifices by cutting carbon emissions, getting a jab, and various things.
Let's talk about carbon emissions.
You have the reward of being a member of the cult of science, and everybody else is in the out-group.
Yeah,
let's talk about carbon emissions.
And the human footprint. You gotta love that word.
Yeah.
So they tell us that if we don't stop polluting the environment with CO2, which literally everything that's alive does, then the world's gonna burn, basically.
But it's gonna burn by warming. What do they say it's going to warm, less than 1 degree Celsius over the next century? I'm like, you don't have to give us credit for making the climate better.
Yeah. Now, carbon emissions from the outset have just been a ploy to get more control over society by reducing people's means of production. Because if you don't have the energy to be able to do these things, then you're more dependent on because it's not like we don't have the energy. It's if we get to distribute it to who we want for the sake of the climate.
It's a sort of imperialism of energy, of control.
Yeah.
Of
well,
they don't
they're always fighting for like they tell us the parts of CO2 in the atmosphere were 200 parts per million 1,000 years ago or whatever. But they never ask the question, is it bad that the CO2 is now maybe 400 parts per million?
Yeah.
They just assume it's bad because it's not the same as what it was in Antarctica 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, well...
Or Mauna Loa. I love that they take Mauna Loa because obviously measuring near an active volcano is the best place to get your CO2.
That's gonna give a real representative result.
But if you go and you look at like the amount of CO2 that plants use, they'll grow twice as fast if we triple the CO2. But that's a bad thing. Even though CO2 doesn't become harmful to human health unless you like increase it tenfold.
I guess what the whole oceans rising is also also part of the case. You know, if we warm the planet too much of the polar ice will melt, the sea levels will rise, and coastal areas will flood.
And you move closer inland.
Yeah, it's funny because
but all that concrete we put down in the on the coast.
Yeah, all the infrastructure we built. But it's so funny because you look up so like the homes of these people like John Kerry and Barack Obama who are behind.
Oh,
us,
they all have beach houses.
Right next to the ocean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Florida is supposed to be swallowed up in the next while.
They were saying 20 years ago by this year. The United Kingdom would be like Siberia because of global warming. I don't know how they figured that, but that's from the Pentagon.
Yeah, well, the United Kingdom hasn't gotten measurably closer to Siberia, that's for sure. That's from the Pentagon, so that's not just some individual quack. That's the
Pentagon was saying that.
The force of a large branch of government.
Yeah. They were warning the Bush administration.
Yes. And the solution is the United States make all kinds of reforms while the rest of the world does nothing. If you're thinking that burning fossil fuel is the cause of so much of this, so much harm, then the logical alternative is, okay, Let's use nuclear energy.
Yeah, let's because try and invest in a non-fossil fuel-based economy.
Yeah. Yeah, and something that's viable.
Yeah.
Because you can't power us all off of solar and wind. It's just not possible yet.
Well, it's not really ever possible because solar and wind fluctuate too much.
Yeah.
You're not going to have power at night.
Yeah, but there's very little interest in realistic alternatives to keep using. Yeah.
Well, that and that people don't really have hope for a realistic alternative. So then they go and they say, well, we only have 200 years of oil left or whatever they decide the new number is. They've been saying that for 200 years or whatever. But
yeah.
We only have this much petroleum left and you don't think in the next 200 years we can figure something out? Or find some more or something, but instead you see the neighbors and the people around you as the problem because they're just trying to survive too.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't think somebody's going to say, hey, well, if this is going to run out, I'm going to make it big by this new energy source.
I'm sure people were saying the world was overpopulated before we had chemical fertilizer. Before the Haber-Bosch process made ammonia.
Yeah.
And then, guess what? We started to make ammonia, and our yields went up 5-10-fold. That capability isn't out of the realm of possibility. There's been farms in the U.S. that have yielded 600 bushels an acre of corn, which the average yield in the country is like 190.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lack of faith that the resources in God's world will be enough. You know, the ability to grow food, the ability to produce energy are among these.
Yeah, and if you have any faith, you believe Christ is going to come back.
Yeah.
Instead you're worried about maybe there's going to be too many people in the world before he comes back.
Yeah, so and then the solution is to cut it off at the pass by having, killing children and, not having as many children. So, you know, which is in a sense destroying adults' lives too, because, if you have people living married but child-free all their lives, you're encouraging them to live what is not a good life, in as much as if they're choosing to be child free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's very self-centered.
Yeah.
And I find a lot of people have who have this self-centered mentality. You know, they I guess the next plausible thing is to euthanize themselves when they don't want to live anymore.
Yeah.
Because if you're not living for yourself, you never even consider that an option.
Yeah, exactly. Because you cut off everything that's life-giving, and then you cut off, and in doing so, you cut off everything. When you have this mentality of trying to reduce humanity, there's a very interesting quote. Where did I hear this? The other day, and it was something that reminded me of the people who claim to love humanity but hate humans.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Like all these doctors who want to save us but also keep us from reproducing.
Yeah.
You remember when they were doing the Zika stuff and saying, you better not have kids because they might turn out deformed.
Mm.
I wonder where that ever went. They turned out normal and so they couldn't push the agenda anymore, or?
I don't know. When you cut out everything that's life-giving, you cut out everything that's worth living for. And so, and why, it's no surprise that people are thinking about, I'm 70 and have some health condition and I just don't care to live anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there's pain and I don't care to live with pain, and so, gone. It is self-centered at its root, but it's formed by self-centered choices and sort of a self-centered direction that has been set by all these things before it.
Yeah. Coming back a little bit to that CO2 stuff, mm-hmm. You ever heard people say the Amazon is the lungs of the earth?
Oh, yeah.
All these science people, because it makes so much oxygen. That is the dumbest thing.
Yeah,
because the Amazon is a mature forest, and so it's not accumulating any more biomass. It's decaying as fast as it's making it.
Yeah.
And so when a plant decays, it releases the same amount of carbon back into the atmosphere that it sequestered while it was growing. And so it makes no oxygen. The Amazon makes no oxygen for the world, because it uses the same amount every single day.
Yeah,
but that's your science for you.
If you think about it, if the Amazon were putting out a whole bunch of oxygen, then it would locally, you know, in that region.
Well, that's what they've been teaching kids for at least 20 years: is that plants make oxygen, animals make CO2. You have to have this balance, or it doesn't work out. Animals make CO2. Oh, yeah. You want to know how they make CO2? They eat plants, and then the carbon in the plant goes back into the atmosphere. That's all an animal does. It just decays it in a different manner than if you just let it in the ground to rot.
Yeah.
The only actual sequestering carbon is like building houses and making furniture, and because petroleum doesn't get formed anymore.
Yeah. Exactly, but...
But they tell you, you know, plants make oxygen, and then if you believe that, you're going to think we need to plant more trees because the trees are going to make us oxygen so we don't die. And that there's not a harmony in nature, but that's not how it works.
Yeah, I remember in a geography book reading about the ills of deforestation in the Amazon rainforest, which I guess it's not, nowadays it's not being depleted as quickly as it's growing, so it's not, you know, it's not like we're destroying the rainforest anyway, but it was all about this, then we won't have enough trees to,
I was told an interesting thing about part of the Amazon is they have this soil that has so much iron in it that when the iron oxidizes, I guess, or something, I don't know what it is, when it dries out, it becomes kind of like hard as a brick. And so then it actually is difficult for them to get trees to grow there again. But since it remains moist, then they keep, you know, it's still soft and pliable.
Yeah. Huh.
So, I mean, it might make sense to leave those trees, but also people are cutting them down and then making houses out of the bricks they make from digging up the dirt.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like such a bad thing.
Yeah. It just comes back to like a hatred of other people. Like if you hate other people, of course you wish that you couldn't see them leaving any evidence on planet Earth. Because you think you own it, but if you actually care about humanity, then you want to share the resources that the world has, and the world has a lot of them.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, I'm trying to think about that because is it hatred of other people or is it mixed with a sort of self-hatred of, you know, human beings are costing the world something and. You know, I can prove myself better by this, but, you know, then everybody else has to get up to speed with this religion, is what it is. Because, you know, everybody has to join the cult in order to redeem themselves, because otherwise, you know, lives are not worth it without some kind of allegiance to this idea of preserving the climate or
even though nobody can articulate what preserving the climate even means.
Yeah.
We just wanted the status quo because the status quo is fluctuations. That's what it's been doing forever. So.
Yeah.
You want it to remain like 1950? Is that what you want it to be?
Yeah, well, that's where they were predicting global cooling in the 1970s. You know, we're going to enter another mini ice age. And,
then we had like a hot summer, so then it was back to global warming.
Yeah. Yeah, and the solution to global cooling was government regulation of the energy industries. And the solution to global warming was government regulation of the industries. Now it's not global warming as much as it is climate change because they discovered, it actually fluctuates a bunch. And so it's the fluctuations that are the problem. The solution is government regulation of the energy industries.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. So it's not only a hypothesis that has to be proved correct. It's even a little worse. It's the problem is whatever it is, but the solution is always the same. Reminds me of the phrase from old Soviet Russia that it's a place that where the... It's a place where the past is always changing, but the future is certain.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Never let a good crisis go to waste. But if you can't find a crisis, you got to make one. I've linked this before, but have you ever seen the interview with Yuri Bezmenov? He was a KGB officer that defected and was giving an interview, I think, in Canada. And he kind of explained the methodologies of the KGB, which most people think that the KGB was like mostly like spying on people when they only did a little bit of that. And the most of it was propaganda and making a more successful propaganda campaign. So they had some like methodology of how to make people communists, and part of it was like demoralizing the population, and that's not making you sad. That's literally taking your morals away. And it's those people that they have to make a crisis in order to normalize the situation. And if you go and you watch his video, it'll make sense. Yeah. He says the situation in brotherly Czechoslovakia has been normalized because you make a crisis and then you can normalize it so that you can consolidate power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen the thing in the Book of Revelations where it says people are going to be like crying peace and security, and then when they say peace and security, the destruction will fall upon them?
Oh, no, I haven't seen
that. I might
be
slightly misquoting it. It's pretty interesting because the UN has like a big statue of like this, basically it looks like a beast described in Revelations, and underneath it says peace and security.
Really?
The things that you'd have to see to believe. Like,
I know.
I will either pull that picture up, or I'm going to censor this part of the podcast. But
yeah, that'd be something to show that, because some of these coincidences are.
They like literally are like, "Hey, I'm the bad guy," and it's like this conspiracy theory about Mr. Beast. That he's actually the Antichrist.
Oh.
He literally calls himself Mr. Beast.
Yeah. Well, but then about the UN, it makes me think of what you said before about 2030 cities, mm-hmm. Or 15-minute cities. Yeah. And it's like, and you will be happy within your limited radius that we restrict you to.
Yeah.
It's like how do you think you're the good guys still?
I don't think they're even pretending to be the good guys. It's just you don't have the power as an individual to stop them, and there's absolutely zero coming together of people to stop them.
Yeah.
So it's gonna keep going.
There's very little courage on the individual or on the group level these days.
Yeah.
And you see that in the response to the vaccine too. You know, there's something like 80% of the countries had one dose, and it's more convenient to get the vaccine, sure. But
I can't remember it exactly, but it was like they had like a drag time story hour basically at some local thing in a place in Kentucky, and the Knights of Columbus went together and they denounced it or whatever, but their mm-hmm. denunciation was so weak, I guess. Like, I guess it was good they denounced it, but they could have more forcefully denounced it, I guess. And the other side was just like, because it was a fundraiser for some charitable cause or whatever. And the other side was just like, you know, they might be bad people, but I would take money from Satan if he gave it to me. And that's what they said, like, basically.
Well, in a way, that's what they did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's called selling your soul, buddy. It's not just a weird motif in a country song. It's a real thing.
Yeah, it's not a. It has eternal consequences. But people don't. I guess there's a lack of consideration of anything weighty. You know, people don't think of their soul as being at stake, because that's uncomfortable. But then when you don't think in terms that are consequential like that, you also can't think. You also really can't think about the meaning of life, and you cut off what could be a real journey toward God, because you're not considering direction, because that's too...
You're just an ostrich with your head in the sand.
Yeah.
Because you're uncomfortable with reality.
Yeah, and thinking about hell. But yeah, go ahead and take money from Satan for your charitable cause. See how the cause goes.
Yeah. But that's how it seems like with so many people sell out their morality by saying that, you know, they justify it with something good. They say, oh, well, I'm accepting an evil, but something good, a greater good is coming from it.
Yeah. Yeah. But we don't live in a morally complicated world in that way, where you have to juggle, you know, well, this would be wrong, except because of this reason and that reason, it actually is right and the best thing to do. No? No,
that sounds like the devil justifying it to you.
Yeah, that sounds a whole lot like the devil. It's really... Things can be difficult, but they're not morally complicated, usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Make a good t-shirt. I have a growing list of t-shirts that I want to make.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, usually they're like politically incorrect kind of stuff.
Oh.
But
yeah, I like it when I see people wearing those kinds of t-shirts around, you know, and occasionally you see one... Usually the Christian ones, though, are with just a single Bible verse on it, and then it's like, well, it's probably a Baptist church, but still not bad, you know?
Yeah, well, quoting single Bible verses usually gives you improper theology.
Yeah. There's a satire article it reminded me of, this discussion reminds me of, and it on the Babylon Bee, and they said, going to Zoom church will give you access to heaven from Zoom.
So you're in hell, but you get a little phone and you get to see heaven.
It just sounds like more hell. Yeah,
it would be kind of interesting if we could do like a satire of people who quote Bible verses, just to show you how ridiculous it is to quote Bible verses.
Yeah, well, here's the thing: the devil can quote Bible verses, right? And he does when he tempts Jesus in the desert.
Yeah,
and he quotes the Psalms, but it's not the quotation of them that makes it a good thing. It's the fuller understanding, and that's why God gave us a church. You know?
Yeah. You're just going to go interpret any Bible verse the way it makes you feel today.
Yeah. But that makes me think of... So when this whole COVID thing happened and everybody got really scared... and there was maybe reason to for a couple months, and then we discovered it was not so much reason to be scared. But so many churches just closed for weeks.
They just rolled over and did whatever the government told them.
Yeah. Well, do you think if this happened again, how many churches do you think would do that?
I think the Catholic Church would do it again.
Hmm. Yeah, well... But do you suppose there'd be any priests who, on an individual level, would say, no, I'm not stopping people from coming to Mass again?
You know, that's one of the things is that the priests have to be obedient to their bishop. And a lot of, coming from a Protestant perspective, that doesn't make any sense.
But, that's true.
But the priests get their orders from the bishop. And when I say orders, they're holy orders. And so it'd be wrong for them to go against their duty, even if their duty, you know, even if they're given an unjust order, they still have to follow it because that's not their authority to usurp.
Yeah.
So, I think the bishops would tell them to shut down Mass again because we got the new boogaloo disease that we gotta keep from getting.
Yeah. COVID-24 or whatever it ends up being.
Yeah, do you remember which, they cited, like, a time in the past when they closed churches? And so, do you remember them doing that?
Oh. Yeah, was that the Spanish flu, or was that a different time?
I think they might have referenced the Spanish flu and maybe, like, St. Andrew's plague or something. Or maybe I'm thinking of St. Andrew's plague. I remember there was a time that there was, like, a big plague going through Rome. And then they had, like, a Eucharistic procession or something, and that was the day it decided to wane off. But we're going to say, now we're just going to shut the doors of the church, and maybe that'll keep God from being angry at us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so insulting that they just told us to watch Mass on TV.
Yeah, it didn't feel like going to Mass. And I know it's not just in a feeling.
It's not going to Mass. There's some good in pondering the mysteries of the Mass in a visual way, I suppose, but it's not going to Mass. And it's no more fulfilling your Sunday obligation than not doing it. And for the church to just say, well, do that instead, it's not like that's a substitute at all. Not even close.
Yeah.
You might as well have told me to read the newspaper.
It was pretty sad, but I hope it never happens again. But I hope if it does, then there's more courage.
Yeah, Father Chad Ripperger, he says in one of his he has like video conferences that he gives that he said before the pandemic, he told people, he said, if people don't stop going to communion in mortal sin, they're not going to be able to go to communion. God's going to stop them. And then after that, people weren't allowed to go to church anymore. And he goes and he explains that that's what he thinks, you know, he didn't expect it to come true quite that literally. But, I don't know, at the start of it, I was thinking that, you know, this might be it for good, you know? Because you never know.
Yeah.
And the church has this precept that you got to go to communion during the Easter season. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't offer communion during the Easter season.
Yeah.
Of all the times of the year to close Mass, it's the one time that we have to, you know, like that's...
It's uncanny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's one of those things that's so often misunderstood is whether one is worthy to take communion. Because I'm sure you've heard all kinds of Protestants talking about how, why can't I take communion at a Catholic Mass? I've even heard some who say they have. You know, they've just gone up and taken it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's not good for you.
You know, in the past, it was very common for priests to teach people to ask their confessor if they can go to communion.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think that was mostly for us. It wasn't really so the confessor can forbid you as much as so that you don't have to worry about making the call.
Yeah.
Because when it's you have to make the call that you're worthy to receive the body of Christ. Wouldn't it have just been nice if a priest could say, yeah, it's okay?
Yeah, and a priest who knows what's on your heart, what's on your...
Yeah. St. Anthony Claret talks a little bit about going to confession. And he says when you go in, tell him if you're married or single. He says tell him what your state in life is. And I've never heard that before until I did that translation. And then I found it on a brochure in the FSP.
Oh.
They actually ask you to do that, too. I'm like, wow, I didn't realize that we did that in English.
You know, it's really funny, because the first time I went to confession to a priest from the FSSP, and I didn't have any, it was just kind of out of the blue. He asked me, are you married or single? And I was like, well, I'm not married. I never knew why he asked that, but that's really interesting. It used to be more just a common thing.
Well, it's because the sins are different depending on it. Because depending on your sin.
Yeah, that's true.
So that was also where he says to ask your confessor if you can go to communion and not just suppose that just because you went to confession, you're good to go.
Yeah.
And then he also had one that he was saying that, like, for, I don't remember what he was talking about for, but he said, like, if you go to communion once a month, it would please God if you would try and go twice a month, and if you go twice a month, if you go once a week, and I think that was because back in the day people took it more seriously, and so they didn't go because they didn't want to have to do all the work of getting themselves ready, I guess. Because you gotta go be sorry for your sins and tell them to a priest, and then not eat food, and you know, and so if you actually are doing those things, it would be good for you to go more often. But now, now people are just going because they didn't have full freedom of the will when they were committing their mortal sins. Because they say, you know, in order for a sin to send you to hell, to be a mortal sin, you got to have freedom of the will and sufficient knowledge of the evil. And so then you're just like, well, did I really have full freedom of the will?
Yeah.
I'm addicted to it, so it's just menial.
It was a bad day. It's cheap, because it cheapens the fact that there aren't, you know, there are times when people don't have the full freedom of their will. Sometimes people who are guilty come down harder on themselves than people who are more guilty and trying to justify.
It might lessen the gravity of it, but that call should still be for your confessor to make.
Yeah, and because even if it's not full freedom of will, that doesn't make it not a sin.
If you really are addicted to something and you go and you confess it every week, and your confessor says, okay, yeah, you're avoiding all near occasion of sin, and he makes that judgment, okay. But you saying, well, it's just really hard not to sin. that's not good enough.
Yeah.
And so they just make everything a venial sin. Everything's venial.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you want to bet on that? Because you're betting a lot on that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've heard priests give pretty bad advice about that.
Yeah.
Because
they're trying.
I guess what it is if you're struggling with some sin, but you keep putting yourself in near occasion of sin, then you can't excuse it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have that tendency to not remove themselves, whether it's bad friends or whatever. If you can't have a phone in your room without watching porn, well, get rid of your fucking phone.
Yeah. If it's better to go into the kingdom of heaven without one of your eyes...
without an iPhone. Yeah, that's what he was talking about.
Yeah, without an iPhone. Yeah, that's what it was. Hey. Who knew?
I remember a priest saying something like that. It's just like, you know, if your phone is causing you to sin, get an alarm clock. If you can't afford an alarm clock, I'll buy you an alarm clock so that you don't have to have it next to your bed at night.
Yeah, if you can't afford an alarm clock, sell your phone and buy an alarm clock.
Yeah, but you know what it comes down to is people don't trust God to take care of them enough that if they seek first the kingdom of God, that they're going to have their other needs met.
Yeah, and
I have to have my phone to have a job. You know?
Yeah.
If you live in a city and they put porn on billboards, because that's what they do in pretty much every city that exists.
No.
And if that's leading you to sin, you know, you can move. And you might not know how it's going to work out, but it's going to work out for the best.
Yeah. Yeah, because nothing from God requires you to continue making a sinful choice.
Yeah.
Or even once make a sinful choice. And so, yeah, but people so often fall into despair because they don't realize how much, in a sense, radical change that you're sometimes called to make in order to follow the way of God.
A lot of times, right? it's money.
Mm-hmm.
And like people say, well, I can't afford another kid, and I'm like, dude, you're 300 pounds. You can afford another kid. I don't care. There's enough. I don't know a single person in the United States that starved to death because they didn't have food. You might starve to death because you're anorexic or you can't digest it, but you're not starving to death because there's not food.
Yeah. Even the people who are homeless, it's not because there's not food. It's because it doesn't get to them, or they don't make their way to it.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of food out there. They say things.
You could literally walk through a cornfield after harvest and pick up enough corn to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, people don't live near the farms anymore.
Yeah.
But I've filled up 5 gallon buckets full of corn after harvest on just dozens of acres.
Wow. You know, they say it costs something like $15,000 a year to raise a child.
$15,000?
Yeah, per year.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, on a single child.
I thought it was like $2,000 or something is what they said.
No,
how did they figure their child support?
I don't know how they figure it. I don't know exactly how they figure that, but I think
child support's not $7,000.
No, but these days they figure things like daycare into this is more like news articles saying.
I got an idea how to save on daycare. Stay at home like you're supposed to.
Yeah, take care of your own kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a radical thing to think taking care of your kids is not just a given anymore.
Yeah, I know a guy who makes like 6 figures, and he sends his kid to daycare. I'm like, what the heck? He's 3 years old.
Yeah, it's. I can't understand.
Well, why does your wife have to work too if you personally make 6 figures? Can you explain that one to me?
Yeah. Well, she wants to. Well, that's then. I don't know what to tell you.
Or maybe figure out how to limit your expenses or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting the kind of strange life situations we come up with in a sort of, you know, when certain things have been twisted in society.
All this modern technology is supposed to make our life better, and instead we become slaves to it.
Yeah.
We got to keep working so the electricity stays on. Why? Why does the electricity need to stay on?
I love how you're like the libertarian of this situation. Like when they go up on the political debate, they're like, we don't agree with seatbelt laws, and everybody's like, huh? And then you're like, yeah, you don't need electricity, and it's like, well, it's true, but everybody's going like, huh? What do you mean no electricity? How do you live? Well, go back 100 years, the house that didn't have electricity.
Ask your great-grandma. She'll know.
Well, we don't know our great-grandma because You know, the last two generations were had when the at age 30 instead of 20, and so.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Older relatives are not so well known to younger people these days.
Yeah. I'm not against seatbelts, so don't tell people that.
No. Nobody can't seatbelts here.
Well, maybe seatbelt laws. Seatbelt laws are stupid.
Yeah, maybe fines for not putting your seatbelt on, but it's. Yeah.
I like them.
It's good to have them.
Yeah. I'll pay the $50 or whatever it costs them to put them in. I wonder, this was a theory I came up with like last night, but I've been working on it for a little while, that Adam and Eve, they were created in a garden, and their job was to tend to the plants and stuff, and people still have that calling deep down, and so if you're not working with the earth, not like Mother Earth worshiping stuff, but like if you're not tilling the ground and making... you know, take dominion over the earth and growing food from it, you're missing out on that garden part that reminds us of paradise and puts us closer to our creator. And
yeah.
And it just, you know, you're there's something missing in your life. And so many, like, I don't hardly know anybody that actually gardens. There's a couple people that drive their tractor over the ground and throw seeds on it, but that's not gardening.
No. Yeah, it's even manual, as in with the hands, labor at large is not as common as it used to be. But yeah, gardening. I agree. There's something that's connected to God's creation about it.
Yeah, it's different than other manual labor, like building houses. That's cool and all. Christ built houses, but gardening is. Like man's first calling.
Well, ultimately, there are things you get taught by gardening, in an implicit sense. Like you don't bring forth the things that come, you don't bring forth the fruits of the earth. All you can do is tend to them, and the seeds grow by their own, by something. In a sense, it happens by forces beyond a person, but all you can do is optimized to help. You know, all you can do is to work toward.
All the anthropologists are going to go around saying that humanity first was hunter-gatherers, not gardeners.
But
I'm going to tell you, humanity was first gardeners, and then they got kicked out of the garden, so they became hunter-gatherers.
Yeah.
I don't know, isn't it funny how science will go find some little piece of evidence that then they try and use it to disprove something that's not really, it's not possible to disprove.
Yeah.
Oh, well yeah. We tracked down all the items in the universe and decided they originated from one point, therefore, Big Bang. You go, yes, and you say, so you're an atheist. They're like, yeah. And you're like, well, why are you an atheist? Well, I don't believe in all that God magic stuff. Okay, well, who created the universe? It came from nothing. You mean that's more logical? You don't believe in that magic God stuff, but you believe that the universe came from nothing.
Yeah. Something... Yeah, I thought we disproved spontaneous generation several centuries ago.
Yeah, except when it came to the entire universe.
Yeah, that part. But
it happens once every 100 quadrillion years.
Yeah, well, the Big Bang really threw a wrench and really put a hole, pun intended, in the atheist argument, because. The atheists at the time were really disturbed by the idea that the universe had a definite beginning point.
They liked the whole circle of life stuff.
Yeah, they liked the whole idea that it's just always been, and it's just the way things are. But the universe having a definite beginning...
But we can trace
is,
back to
is
a
not
certain
so
day.
Conducive.
What is it, 13 trillion years ago?
Yeah, 13.8 billion years ago, not a day more or less.
So it was on a Saturday? Wait, no. Isn't that what the Christians say? God finished making the universe on a Saturday and then he rested?
No, he finished on Saturday or Sunday?
I guess he finished on Friday and he rested on Saturday.
Yeah, I guess he did. Yeah.
Scientists out there being like, all right, so we figured out that light was the first thing that was created in the universe and is the constant for everything else.
Yeah.
Who figured that out first?
Yeah.
The Jews? Albert Einstein throwing some of that Judaism on us. Well, did you do any thought into, like, the population that the world can hold or anything?
Oh, no, I didn't do any calculating.
I did a little bit, but it's really kind of impossible to calculate it because the numbers are pretty arbitrary. But to all the people who say that we have trouble feeding the world or whatever, corn is the largest cash crop in America, and 40% of it goes into our cars because we don't need it. 40% of the largest cash crop in America goes into cars.
Yeah.
So anybody who's telling you, yeah, and we do it in such a way that we don't even get in, like, we turn it into ethanol, we put it in our car, and it uses more petroleum than we actually save by burning the ethanol through all the transportation and logistics of getting the ethanol into your car. And that's not even adding in the degradation to the seals and stuff in your car that ethanol does, because it oxidizes stuff. So you burn more petroleum, and the idea is you get a cleaner burn because you have an extra oxygen in the reaction. I don't know if that makes sense to you. But that's the best we got, and we're going to burn 40% of our food supply because we don't need it.
Yeah.
And if people who make you do that are going to tell you that the world's overpopulated.
Yeah, there's just no reason to think that we're at a limit.
Yeah.
There's no reason to think we're anywhere close.
It's kind of funny. Elon Musk's whole idea with SpaceX is because Earth is finite, so we're going to need an extra planet one of these days. And so he wants to be the one to do it. So we can be an interplanetary species. I mean, it sounds like Star Trek, but doesn't he realize, and I'm sure he does, that it would be so much easier to just habitate Antarctica? Yeah, like the moon. Even the moon is way less habitable than Antarctica. Just go over
there. Yeah, Antarctica.
There's abundant water. It only gets to like negative 80 or something Celsius.
Yeah. Yeah. We live in Alaska, right? So we can live in Antarctica.
Yeah, the Eskimos.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive that people survived there, that the Eskimos survived there, as, you know, just with this, with the technology they did.
Yeah, I was told that igloos have like a maximum temperature of like 60 degrees, and I thought that was surprisingly high, but apparently the ice is conductive enough to freeze and stay frozen and not drip on you.
Oh, really?
When it's cold enough outside. That you can get the air to 60.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. That's what we keep our houses at.
Yeah. No, but yeah, you don't have to create a whole new atmosphere with Antarctica.
Yeah, that's a lot. That helps.
Yeah.
And you don't have to recycle water. There's a lot of pluses, and it's a pretty big continent. A lot of pluses.
Yeah, I guess the idea of being able to put somebody on Mars is cool, but it's just going to take so much. Elon Musk, though, he said at one point, there are two kinds of people. There are the real humanists and the extinctionists. And once you unsee it, once you see it, you can't unsee it. That's what I was thinking. That's one of the things I think back to with these people who claim to love humanity but hate humans. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and it seems like it's the majority of people. Haven't you heard, 90% of people will tell you they love dogs more than they like the average person.
That's really sad.
Yeah. That dogs are not people.
If we saw other people the way God saw them, then we would never conceive of saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people who I'm sure disappoint God, but not, you know, there's a sense in which.
But he would have been willing to die for them if they wanted it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of these other things with these scientists, you know, who think they know everything. 95% of biologists will say that a fetus who's not yet born is a human life. But it's just they think that you should be able to kill it anyway.
Yeah. It's weird how the legal system will charge you for double homicide if you kill a pregnant woman.
Yeah.
That, and if you kill an eagle's egg, that's apparently a big no-no.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was a potential life, I guess.
Potential eagle. No, it's because they know it's an eagle and they know it's a baby, but they don't care about babies because there's 7 billion of people. And apparently having more of them that makes you less valuable.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, I don't think kids these days are less valuable go back 50 years when the population is probably half of what it is now.
Yeah.
In the world.
I think the reason that Islam is spreading, and when I mean Islam, I mean Muslims, the reason that Muslims are spreading to Europe and to America, but mostly in America, it's more like South Americans and stuff are moving to America. The reason that we have these immigration problems is because people don't want to have their own kids, and God knows that, and so he's going to give the land to somebody who will.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting one. Well, I think of that in sort of a natural law sense. I'll explain what I mean this way. The societies of the West are so far removed from God that in a way they have a depression that causes them to want to commit cultural suicide and a sort of literal suicide in the form of euthanasia, but you don't just explicitly commit cultural. You can't just kill your whole culture, even if you kill yourself. So the way to do it is to import people who are going to overrun your culture and overrun.
I don't think anybody's that powerful, though. Like, I don't know. The way the world goes is the way the way people's relationship with God goes. He allows the evil to happen through wicked people.
Yeah.
And the reason he's allowing it is because we're not going to have our own kids. So God's going to just be like, well, you know what? You can have Muslim terrorists.
Yeah, that's the natural consequence of, you know, this is what comes.
Yeah. You don't want to have your kids? Well, we'll give it to the Mexicans. Because the Mexicans are more likely to have kids than you.
I mean, in this whole deal of getting immigrants, I guess I'd take Mexicans above Muslims. Anyway.
I mean, what if they're the satanic Mexicans, though?
Yeah, maybe not the Santa Muerte Mexicans.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah. Well.
Ever since they took Pachamama to the Vatican.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that when they...
Well, yeah, and then somebody threw it in the river.
Yeah, kudos to that guy. You know, Cardinal Burke talked about that guy. Mm-hmm. Cardinal Burke, I don't remember the name of the guy. I think he was, you know, kind of well known, but he threw Pachamama. Pachamama was an idol that they stuck in the Vatican for support the Amazon Day or whatever. And he saw that and he threw it in the river. And they recovered it from the river. But Cardinal Burke said the guy was like heroic courage, kind of like Phineas or whatever. I believe that's what he said.